police. Otherwise, if you look young, you can be jacked up. And if you're homeless, then you can be sent to juvenile hall. Actually, you can be sent to juvenile hall anyway, but people with homes are likely to be sent home. People who are homeless have got no home to go to. And this, of course, was a major concern that I pointed out both at City Council and later when I discussed this issue on the air. It's not the only, we're not the only city, however, that has this problem. In San Diego, there was a similar curfew problem, and people fought back. And that's what we're going to hear about next. I'm going to play for you a tape of an interview with a fellow named David Doctor. David Doctor is a newspaperman who works for San Diego newspaper. I think it's the Telegraph Tribune, I'm not quite sure. But he also is a Libertarian Party activist, and he was outraged when the city council voted a youth curfew days after the courts threw out the old curfew. Let's hear what he has to say about this and how he responded.
July 21st, about 7 o'clock in the evening. This is a call to David Doctor, Libertarian Party activist in San Diego, who has been fighting the teen curfew down there with 10 to midnight rallies on the beach.
On the line with David Doctor, a Libertarian Party activist. Hi, David.
How you doing?
All right. You're down there in San Diego.
That's correct.
And what's going on down there with this curfew situation?
Well, there's been a curfew in San Diego. Should I give you some history?
Sure, do.
Okay, there was a curfew passed in 1947, exactly 50 years ago, that said that no one under 10 is allowed out. I mean, no one under 18 is permitted out past 10 without an adult.
Uh-huh.
There was a very strict law. The current mayor, Mayor Susan Golding, ran in her last election saying that she was going to strictly enforce the curfew law, which wasn't enforced up until then.
Why do you think she did this other than as an election-era kind of gesture? Has there been some notorious youth crime or youth victimization?
Well, I think you could always find some notorious crime in any category, in any part of the population. I'm sure there was one at the time, and she used it. I mean, it's definitely a popular issue, and she just, sure went to the voter groups and then decided to go with it.
Mm-hmm. And she won election?
What?
She won election on this issue, or?
She won election. I mean, I wasn't here 3 years ago, but as far as I know, she definitely was a major part of her platform and her sort of get tough on crime issue.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So they started enforcing it about a year after that, which would be 1995, 2 years ago. The ACLU filed a case against this thing. It was unconstitutional.
Uh-huh.
Went through a few courts, and just recently, I moved here 6 months ago, so about at the beginning of June, it finally reached, 2 years later after the original court case, it reached the Federal Circuit Court, which struck it down as being too vague and unconstitutional.
Uh-huh.
So, immediately, I mean, as we were all shocked, the immediate response from the mayor was, I don't really care, we're still going to enforce it.
Right.
So just to give you an idea of what kind of pathology or whatever mentality we're living with. But they did about 20 days later pass a new law and another curfew law, but it had some exceptions in it. And one of those exceptions, it included many more exceptions, like if you're on interstate travel, or if you're going to work, or if you're going to an event accompanied by an adult, or supervised by an adult.
Not by an adult, by a parent or guardian.
Right, parent, guardian, or responsible adult, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's not a part of the law here, and I understand it's pretty much the same law, but I'll take a look at it as we speak.
I see. And, there's the next number eight. The eighth exception is if you're exercising your First Amendment, and I quote, exercising your First Amendment right as protected by the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's what we're using to have these rallies every night.
By these rallies, what exactly do you mean? Describe that for the folks out here.
Right, the rallies, we are just, the rallies is really a protest. I mean, I call it a rally rather than a protest just for publicity's sake. It just sounds more gentler. I don't want it to be a violent thing, so it's really a rallying / protest. Mm-hmm. And we're out there every night to give people a place to go that are under 18, a legal place to go, after hours. And also just feel that, I feel personally, being one of the principal organizers, that you know, in order to effectively get rid of it, we have to rally every night until there's so much pressure and people really get wind of it, like your station and you yourself. So there's a huge just pressure building from within San Diego and outside of San Diego to get rid of the law.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, for example, you know, they hold some, like, you know, legalizing drug rallies in Boston once a year. I mean, that's great and all, but I don't really see what it accomplishes. Whereas what, you know, ours is, we're on the 11th night, people are finally going, wait, is this going to go away? And wait, what next are they going to do? I mean, I'm pretty sure we're going to be protesting down at City Hall tomorrow. I'm just, I can't confirm that at the moment.
So we're calling you on Monday, July 21st. You say every night for the last 11 nights there's been a rally. Where exactly is this rally taking place?
The rally is in Mission Beach, San Diego, in Mission Bay Park across the street from the Belmont roller coaster.
And what exactly happens at the rally? Give me a typical scenario.
Yeah, typical rally. We just get down there and hold up signs. I, you know, sort of get everybody pumped up using a megaphone. You know, there's tons of traffic going.
You say you speak through a megaphone, and how many people usually show up, and what's said?
What was the second part?
What is said at these rallies?
Well, okay, so as far as what goes on, you know, we get there, we have just, you know, tons of signs, like 15, 20 signs, a huge sign that says no curfew.
Uh-huh.
And really what we all do is just stand there with signs and just, you know, get our message across to the people that are passing by in the cars.
And how do people generally reacting? Is there a positive response?
An incredibly positive response. I mean, just as a comparison, you know, I guess another group that rallies a lot are the animal rights groups. And, you know, people frequently see them, and no one really honks at them, you know, in terms of a gesture of support. I swear, at least half the cars that go by are honking. And I really, I think that's a sincere, you know, motion to, you know, agree with us and support our fight for freedom.
How about the media? How are they responding to this event?
The media, well, it's, I guess, you know, really overall positive. You know, one station, you know, is against it. Is for the curfew, so it hasn't given us great coverage. But for the most part, it's been very positive. The media, you know, I mean, the first night we had four TV vans that went live at 11 o'clock. That was on the first night, and they covered it the whole weekend. Then, you know, unfortunately for everyone, you know, and especially the family involved, Gianna Versace got killed. That pulled the media away from our story.
What was that all about? We don't know about that up here in Santa Cruz.
Versace?
Yeah.
Oh, he was murdered in Miami. Mm-hmm. But the assassin is supposedly a person who used to live in San Diego.
I actually think they thought they spotted him here in Santa Cruz. There was a story in the paper yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's the fear of crime that's behind this current curfew hysteria?
Well, you know, a lot of people would like to talk about crime. A lot of people like to talk about parenting. I think there's a lot of motivations for people. You know, some people, I feel like a snobbery amongst parents. One parent group, as always, wants to say, you're not raising your child right. He should be in by 10, or she should be in by 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people who actually think, and it's a total falsehood, that this has any effect on crime. It has none. Zero effect on crime. It's almost like saying if we have enforce the speeding limit, there'll be less vandalism. The only thing this law does is exactly what it's written to do. It just keeps people in by 10. It doesn't stop crime. Criminals, if someone's going to spray your house with gunfire, the last thing they're worried about is what time it's going to happen.
But certainly true that if there are less people on the streets, there will be presumably less street crime, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. Actually, I was speaking with someone last night who said, you know, he's like, listen, I used to be a criminal, and he finds the lack of people around easier to commit a crime. There's less witnesses, and it's just easier to track movement.
You know, actually, I do agree with you on that, although I'm kind of giving you some of the devil's arguments here.
Right. Yeah, no. I mean, it doesn't stop crime whatsoever. I mean, people will still be out. Most of the crimes are committed, you know, if someone's going to commit a crime, a lot of them are in cars. There's no way to tell who's, you know, it's really difficult to tell someone's age in a car. Really, it has no impact on crime. Things that happen on crime are laws that are written specifically for that. It's like if you increase the penalty for vandalism, yes, that might, you know, reduce vandalism. But that's a law that's geared towards vandalism. So what we propose is just enforcing the existing laws that punish criminals and not honest people. I mean, the way this law is designed is that if someone were robbed, if there was a problem with speeding, instead of just beefing up enforcement of the speed limit, you just take everyone off the road. You know, penalize everyone for the acts of a few.
Did you, I read some of the newspaper articles around the passage of this law, which was very, very speedy.
Yeah.
It was passed unanimously as an emergency measure, and I guess they're planning to repass it at the end of the summer so it will withstand scrutiny as a non-emergency measure. Was there any research done that would indicate one thing or another about the enforcement of the prior curfew? I'm kind of curious about that. Do you have any?
What they say? I mean, they came out with a quote that said, you know, teen crime or teen victims have gone down 28% because of the curfew. But I mean, you could tie any two statistics together and say, oh, that happens. But the fact of the matter is that the police department is not living enforcing things in a vacuum. They're doing many things to fight crime. And you could say, oh, we got new tires on the patrol cars, and therefore we have a 10% reduction in crime. Mm-hmm. But there's many things that happen, and I feel by looking at the essence and the actual nature of the law, it's just ludicrous to think that any criminal would ever care about a 10 p.m. curfew. They already don't care about the laws that are stopping them, that are, you know, meant to stop them from doing the actual crime they want to commit.
The argument's being used in Santa Cruz to pass a curfew, which is due to pass city council probably 6-1 tomorrow night here in Santa Cruz. And our curfew is more restrictive than yours in some respects, less in others. It penalizes people who are 15 or under, and it also, however, does not have an exception for a responsible adult.
I see.
You have to be out with your parent or guardian.
And that is inaccurate. It actually did have an exception for a responsible adult, which was buried. We weren't able to find it. And indeed, when we confronted city council about it, they didn't correct us that it had such a... such an exception, which is interesting because usually I'm quite strongly criticized if I make a misstatement, and this was a significant misstatement that I made, but they didn't say anything, leading me to believe that they hadn't even very carefully read what they were passing or didn't care that the information got out to the public improperly.
Parent or guardian, or else on a mission with the permission of your parents directly to or from,
right,
or to a political event or a other scheduled event. And I don't think it even has a political event exception. There's an exception about going to and from a political event. Whether you can actually schedule an event after the curfew hours, we may have to decide if we decide to do something like you're doing down there. Do you have an organization that's involved in this, or is this sort of simply your brainchild as an individual?
It's really my brainchild. I mean, you know, at times we call it Libertarian Rock, just because I have a website called Libertarian Rock. But, you know, really it's just a bunch of people that are, you know, disgusted by the law. And, I mean, but really our main problem with it is that, you know, a lot of people discuss the law in terms of does it fight crime or not. And another debate that's been popular is who should parent children, you know, the government or parents. The major motivation for me is just looking at people that are under 18 as Americans. I mean, when someone's born in the United States, they shouldn't be born a second-class citizen. They should be born an American with all the constitutional rights that every American deserves. And as of now, I mean, basically, if you ask a kid, it's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? It's like, yeah, I want to be an American. Because right now, they're treated like second-class citizens.
Well, playing the devil's advocate again, I would say to you, then you suggest that kids should be able to make contracts, smoke cigarettes if they wish, make other decisions like drive cars that adults make. Are you suggesting a lowering of the age of drinking to 12 or below? Let's say no age since they're an American. Why can't they get drunk at age 5?
Well, I don't think that there should be any age discrimination. I mean, I just, you know, they shouldn't be treated like second-class citizens. You're born here, you get all the rights.
So you do take a radical position that you think, for example, children should be allowed to enter into contracts at age 5?
Into a contract at age 5.
Yeah, legal contract, I mean.
Right. I think that the times that will actually happen would be so rare. I think that most people, you know, I would rather make an error, you know, or whatever. I would rather give someone more rights than less rights. So if in the isolated incidents where someone messed up and there was a faulty contract signed, I think that overall the net positive is that, you know, human beings are not treated like second-class citizens. And they are given every right.
Well, you admit there's a huge alcohol problem in this country in terms of alcohol abuse, right?
Yeah, but I would say, if, you know, in terms of discussing alcohol, that there's less alcoholism in Europe, and they don't have any drinking age. One of the problems with the fact that, you know, there is a drinking age with alcohol is that it makes it seem cooler. I mean, I don't even drink alcohol, but I think every citizen should have the right to choose and it just makes it more, you know, more attractive. I mean, even with all the smoking and the no drug thing, the fact that they've publicized that it's such a bad thing, even more people are attracted to it. You just make it legal, then it's no big deal, and then it's not a way to be cool.
Right, but much of the drinking problem in the United States doesn't have much to do with age. I mean, it has to do with abuse of alcohol even later on in life, right?
But I think it just comes from an early age, is that that's a cool thing to do, whereas in the European cultures, that alcohol is just a part of everyday life. I mean, you have apple juice in the fridge, and you have wine. I mean, it's just no big deal for, you know, your son or daughter. I mean, I don't know what's a big deal or not, but I'm saying it's very common, and there's just less of a focus on alcohol. And so I think that was possible. But, you know, just getting back to it, I believe that everyone should have equal rights. And so, in certain isolated incidents, you might have certain areas that things would get worse maybe with people that are under 18. But overall, there's just a huge danger if you start treating people like second-class citizens.
Well, what do you say to parents, and this is what has been brought up in Santa Cruz, that are concerned that their children face dangers like forced prostitution, victimization on the streets, drug abuse, violence, gang activity, and so forth, which they wouldn't face if everybody was forced indoors under a curfew? Then a lot of these things would be, which I guess they're presuming happen at night. I'm not sure why they assume that most of these things necessarily happen at night, but maybe they do. Don't you want to protect young people from dangers of this sort?
What I would say to parents is the greatest danger to any young person is an erosion of their civil rights. And so I really get extremely saddened by the fact that parents should be the first person to say, you're treating my child like a second-class citizen. So the first thing they should be protecting is their civil rights. The other things can be covered by the crime laws we already have. But you must, I mean, what those parents are doing, they're just giving birth to second-class citizens.
Well, police are arguing that having early contact with kids and in terms of informal curfew contact, whereby you don't actually go to court, but you get some sort of a come to the police station with your parents and talk it out stuff. I'm not familiar with how you do it in San Diego, but that is supposedly how it's going to happen here in Santa Cruz, although it's not entirely clear, and that's one of the criticisms we have. It's so vague as to how they're proceeding. But what about this argument that police and parole officers are making that, look, you can really arrest kids from a life of drug abuse and crime early by having early contact with them that's not inside a court system, and that this is how a curfew provides an opportunity for cops to get friendly with the kids?
I totally disagree with that. I think actually more people under 18 hate the police officers because of this law, and that's unfortunate. One of the focuses of the rallies is to keep everything focused. If you're going to hate anything, hate the politicians who are writing these evil laws. One reason why people, I mean, there's such disrespect for the police department in every city I've lived in because they have to enforce these disgusting laws. People will actually be more friendly with the police if the police only came when you were, like, getting your butt kicked. But right now, the police have to hassle you for everything. Or is that a beer in your hand? Is that a cigarette? Or you're out past 10. I mean, if you want to develop relationships, then treat people under 18 with respect.
Have you talked to any social service providers who deal with youth who have, say, drug problems, prostitution problems, alcohol problems? I'm talking about people who are, you know, in not people who are, let's say, users of drugs or alcohol, but who are able to deal with it, but those who aren't, you know, those who have developed medical or criminal problems because they have to steal to get it and so forth, or because they're being victimized by other adults, forced prostitution and so forth. If you talk to youth providers who either favor or oppose this curfew, had any interaction with government agencies or private agencies involved with this stuff?
I haven't. I don't think this is, we're treating one group of the population differently than the other, and it's discrimination. And they made up tons of they had tons of reasons why, you know, blacks should have segregated bathrooms, or to protect society and protect blacks, they should sit on the back of the bus. Or women, if they were given the right to vote, it would disrupt the whole country. I mean, countless times we've had certain groups that have been persecuted for some ridiculous characteristic. And the same thing is going on here. So, you know, all these debates about crime and whether it's an invitation to crime or who should be parenting, I feel are, you know, secondary to the, and almost irrelevant to the main point, which is discrimination against someone because of their age. Everyone should be guaranteed the fundamental, you know, constitutional rights, and that is not happening here. And, you know, it has been even a leap for me. I never realized how much people under 18 are discriminated against. And it's even a leap for the people under 18. I mean, it's almost like talking to a woman in the 1850s and saying, you know what? You should be allowed the right to vote. And she'd almost reply, what do you mean? I'm a woman. I don't have equal rights. Like, yeah, you should. And it takes a while. So when I talk to people that are under 18 and I say, you know, there's no reason you should have less rights than me just because based upon how many days you've been alive on this planet. It's a leap for them, but, you know, we're all learning it at the same time. And I see this as really the spearhead of a huge movement to end age discrimination as the government, you know, no longer does sexual discrimination or racial discrimination.
Well, surely you feel that there's some age at which some things should be restricted to, or do you feel there should be no restrictions whatsoever, no matter how young you are?
No restrictions whatsoever, and even if you applied it to, like, driving. I mean, driving should be based on ability, not age.
So if a five-year-old disagrees with her parent, she should be able to go her own way and do whatever she wants?
Yeah, but I don't think that would happen. I mean, it should be a rare
occasion. Don't you think it happens all the time? Five-year-olds do disagree with their parents.
Right.
They do want to go outside. They may even run away from home.
Uh-huh.
And certainly in some cases, children running away from home is, you know, justified because of parental abuse.
Uh-huh.
But in other cases, it has to do with, you know, the fact that, to some extent, family structures are held together by a power structure and the presumption in the family that those who are older and who at least provide the wherewithal for the family have the right to make the decisions. What you're suggesting is a radical restructuring of American society, perhaps.
Well, no, I don't think it would be a radical restructuring. I don't think that these laws that force people to stay in their families are really the glue that keeps good families together.
No, I agree with you, but I'm talking about your position that there should be, that the children of age five should have equal power and say with adults who are running a family. I actually don't want to debate that issue with you because I don't think I can agree with you.
Uh-huh.
But I think I do agree with you on the teen curfew law.
Right,
so right. I'm not going to try to take the extreme position, but a critic of yours might do that and say, look, so, you know, 4-year-old Johnny should have a right to do whatever he wants, even if you know, his dad and his mom want to have him in. They can't. You're stripping the parents of all tools for controlling their children.
Well, I don't think any human being should be placed under any force whatsoever.
That's a radical position, and I'm not saying that it's a wrong position,
right. But
it's a more difficult argument to make than saying, I don't know, that curfews are bad ideas because of a number of reasons, that they don't really deal with the issues of criminal behavior. They criminalize innocent
people. I don't feel that way. I mean, but my argument is discrimination, you know, and I feel that...
Well, let's talk about the people who have... who've been, you know, kind of coming to these rallies. Have you gotten any support from any organized groups? How's the ACLU deal with this? How about...
The ACLU hasn't really stepped in. The only organization is Youth Speak, an organization that represents people under 18's rights, and they're out of Washington. They mentioned something about boycotting San Diego until the law is repealed. That was just one email, but otherwise, and I think another group is forming called Parents Against the Curfew, and it's based upon that philosophy of just protecting their children's civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, getting, you know, in terms of the family issue, I think parents recognize that their children are being treated poorly, and they have to defend them.
And police are, should we say, respecting the First Amendment rights of folks at the curfew rallies?
Yeah, they've been fantastic, actually. Really good. They're always there. And it's great. They're doing exactly what I believe the police should do, is protect our freedom and not infringe upon it.
Now, another subject that has come up here and that I'm concerned with, because I do work with a homeless group called Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I write for a homeless newspaper, Street Spirit, and I'm also involved with a statewide network which opposes anti-homeless laws called the California Homeless Civil Rights Action Network. How does a curfew affect homeless youth? Do you have any impressions, anecdotes, or observations around this?
Well, you know, when you did bring it up to me in the first part, I really, you know, I never even thought of that, but it's got to be even more oppressive to them. And if someone doesn't have a home, where can they go? And I don't know, you know, I'd definitely be bringing that up down here, but I really haven't thought about it much.
Yeah, maybe when you go to, you're going to the rally tonight?
Yeah, I'm there every night.
Well, that's great. Maybe you can ask, kind of ask around the rally, how many people are homeless there? And maybe get in touch with some of the homeless organizations. For instance, there's a guy in town who's a homeless activist called Larry Mulligan, whose number I'll give you after this interview.
All right.
He's been fighting on behalf of a guy called Reverend Wiley Drake. Heard about him?
No.
Drake is a preacher in Buena Park, here north, who is putting up homeless people in a church, and the city is now on trial for five counts.
I heard about him.
So there's a lot of foolish mayors doing foolish things and foolish laws that are oppressing people, or at least laws being used in a foolish way.
What
do you see as the future of this? In other words, are you simply doing? Is this kind of a night by night, day by day activity? Or do you have any larger political goals? Are you trying to get some sort of state law passed overturning curfews? Are you trying to get a referendum or an initiative going on the?
No, I just see that just a pressure move, just a rally, a protest, and just to force them to repeal it. We just protest enough times, we get enough people to really see our side of it about the age discrimination, and then finally they just have to repeal it from public pressure.
Are you gathering momentum? Are you losing momentum? Are you staying steady? What's it look like?
We're definitely gathering momentum, just in terms of media coverage. You know, MTV called today. There's other parent groups going to be started, Parents Against the Curfew. Right. What's happening is this really what I thought would happen is that as you have it long enough, people come and then they fade away because they think that we're not going to be there in a week from now. But now that we're here to stay, and they know that it's a strong movement. Now people are starting to come back, and I definitely see it growing.
And that was David Doctor in San Diego speaking to me on the phone last July. We've had a few conversations since. He no longer does nightly rallies, but it's weekly rallies he does, including concerts and marches. And last time I spoke to him, I believe it was about a month ago. Actually, I think I received a fax from him. It indicated his movement was still happening, and not clear whether he's reached a position of greater political power. It certainly is continuing, though, which is a positive sign for those of us who agree with him. Here in Santa Cruz, as you know, there was a curfew passed in July shortly after that interview, and it went into effect in September and will become enforced in November, as I understand it. As I mentioned in other shows or previous shows here, the amendments that would allow parents to allow kids to go out after 11, give them a note, which, for example, was part of the San Francisco curfew when it was in force in 1995-96, was rejected by the city council, or more specifically, it was sent to the Public Safety Committee. It was a Celia Scott amendment, a very important amendment, and I believe she made a couple of other amendments as well, that were supposed to be considered by the Public Safety Committee, headed by Kennedy, and I believe Hernandez is also on that Public Safety Committee, and then brought back in September. In fact, that was the very reason the City Council said that they weren't going to debate it, because it would be coming back to a meeting in September. Well, the Public Safety Committee never met. Its most recent meeting, supposedly scheduled for last Thursday at 4 o'clock, never happened. It was canceled. They've done the same thing with Celia Scott's curfew amendment that they're trying to do with Celia Scott, namely bury both Celia Scott and the curfew amendment. You're not getting any action on what she's proposed, and of course you're getting this attempt to repress her and remove her from a position of even limited power. So for those who are interested, I suggest you give a call to the City Council at 429-3550, leave a message for Kennedy and Hernandez and say specifically, what's going on with Celia Scott's curfew amendments? Weren't you going to be bringing them into the Public Safety Committee to be brought back to City Council so that parents who don't want to be stretched into this Procrustean bed, made to follow the rules that some parents may want their kids to follow, be in at 11 or get arrested by the cops, so that there is an exception for them at least? Of course, the entire curfew should be thrown out and probably will be thrown out by a court. Who knows? Probably is a little strong. In Oakland, the Teens on Target came to City Council and presented evidence that most crime happens between 3 and 6. That's where we need the police resources, not some huge curfew effort that looks good for politicians running for office but has no real impact on crime for the youth. And at the Metro Forum that I've mentioned in the past. It was a forum by Metro Santa Cruz, the weekly newspaper, after Kelly Luker's article on criminalizing the young. Every young person at the forum agreed that they didn't want a curfew, that it wasn't a proper solution. Of course, Mark Tracy, the sheriff who pushed for the county curfew, which kind of put the city in the position of pushing for its own curfew, had nothing to say about this. He had no response, as he didn't during the debate, as he hasn't considered significant complaints. He didn't consider testimony when it was really happening. He hasn't met with us on the issue of the curfew, nor has Chief Belcher on this curfew. So it really is one of those fait accomplis. The kind of power grab that you see happening around Celia Scott has happened for a long time around these other issues, but nobody has been noticing. So again, if you want this issue really discussed, as City Council promised it would be discussed, give a call to 429-3550 and ask them to do just what they promised they were going to do. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Here's a little music for you.
The times were lean, your eyes were bold, and we fell right in together like beggars on the road. As the months turn into years, with the passing of each day, it gets harder all the time to find a reason not to stay. And when I need a lifeboat to keep out the sea, you are canvas and rope, and you cradle me.
And that's Fred Small from his fine album, Love's Gonna Carry Us. Well, I promised you to get back to the Eureka situation. Actually, I'm rushing to do an article for the next Street Spirit, the monthly homeless paper that you can pick up downtown from homeless vendors. And here's an interview that I did yesterday with a woman named Southern, who was one of the four people arrested on the South Spit Jetty when police finally moved in to remove people from there. She's going to talk a little bit about what happened. Apparently, protest has had an effect. There was a protest 2 days ago. We've been protesting, of course, by calling in through the California Homeless Civil Rights Action Network, faxing in the bureaucrats who've been forcing people to leave the South Spit Jetty, where homeless people have had an encampment for a decade under the pretext of a health crisis, that was conveniently discovered and pushed about the same time as the county made a binding settlement with the campers, allowing them to stay on the jetty until such time as real accommodations were found. Of course, there are no real accommodations. They've been herded into a campground on the North Jetty and into hotels in downtown Eureka, from which they will be in all probability evicted at the end of the month. But they have gotten a brief stay, and we're going to talk with Southern about that. Southern, again, is one of the four people arrested on the jetty by the cops, not because, ironically, they were making a last stand there, but because they were having trouble getting off in time. They were having trouble getting their vehicle and their pets and so forth. And here you'll hear Southern talking about that.
Oh, yeah, that's great. I'm wondering, did you guys get an extension? Are they going to kick you out tomorrow? What's the plan?
Yeah, they seem to have okayed those of us that are here until the 31st, I believe.
And then what happens?
And I'm not sure as far as that goes. I think they're hoping that by that time they'll have managed to tow off the vehicles on the jetty and reunite them with their owners.
Did you
owners go?
Jesse and the other folks get back to their stuff and their pets and so forth.
We managed to get out today.
And what happened today?
Well, managed to get out there without the county's approval or the sheriff's department's approval.
Good.
And we got our dogs and our cat. And
what are your dogs' names?
Bubba and Outlaw. They're purebred chow chows.
Give them to me again. What's the name again?
Outlaw.
Outlaw.
Bubba.
Bubba.
They're purebred chow chows.
Purebred chow chows. And how about your kitty?
The kitty. Tigger. And
Tigger?
Tigger.
Tigger. Like in Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And they were okay?
Yeah, finally last night, late.
Got them last night late?
Yeah.
And you had to sneak out to get them, or?
No, the animals we got today.
Oh, I see.
Boyfriend got out of jail last night late.
Your boyfriend got out of jail? What's his name again?
Lee Rossiter.
And is he with you now?
Yeah, he's with me here.
Maybe you can, at some point when we're finished, he can talk to me about how things went in jail?
Sure, yeah.
Is he still being charged?
Get you a court date? They didn't. They didn't send him a court date.
No court date. No charge?
I don't guess so, but they gave me a court date.
When's your court date?
On the 10th of November.
And you're charged with what? Disobeying a county health officer?
It's a state health code.
Okay.
I've got a couple traffic violations, expired registration.
Are you having much close contact with other people in the hotel, doing much talking back and forth or not?
Yeah. This hotel is very, very strict. Very, very, very strict. But,
how are they strict?
No visitors that are not presently staying in this motel are allowed on this property at all. If you need to visit someone that is staying in this motel, you must go to the office and call them by phone, and that's how you have it.
So, do I understand that, can you go to somebody else's room?
Yeah, you can go to somebody else's room as long as it's before dark.
As long as before dark. So you're not really considered to be over the age of 10, for the purposes of the motel?
By no means, no.
So you cannot go to the room next door and visit somebody?
After dark, no.
even though you both live there?
Yeah, and they're doing room inspections every day. They expect steady people clean their room every day. Own room, and they come around whether you're here or not. Manager does, and they come all the way in to the bathroom and inspect everything.
Is this the standard process for other people who are there too, or just for the Jetty people?
No, I would say that's just the Jetty people. I didn't see them inspecting any other people's rooms that was up there.
Well, you're getting special treatment. You should feel very happy, right?
No, very, very happy. Very, very happy.
Overjoyed.
Yeah. Feel just like an inmate. Yes, I do.
Where are your pets being kept?
Well, we got fortunate enough, Roy and I, that Daryl, one of the health department workers, agreed to take ours to his home.
Uh-huh.
And
what does Daryl think of all this stuff?
Daryl is some kind of a head guy. Hadn't been working for the health department for very long.
I mean, I know that Jenny Jernigan quit, right?
Pardon?
Jenny Jernigan quit.
I'm not familiar with her.
Oh, she was a health worker who thought that they were doing you a dirty deal, so she stopped working for him.
Right. Well, Daryl wasn't real thrilled himself. He's put in a whole lot more hours than he got paid for this last week.
And
I think he had 110 hours, and he only got paid for 60.
Uh huh.
I thought, quote me on that, but I mean it's something similar to that.
Right.
Let's see. He's doing things probably that he shouldn't. He's just worrying about getting me okay for him later. He's trying to do everything in his power and beyond to help the people out there because it is such a terrible thing, you know. What really amazes me is that, you know, if the county was going to take time, the energy, and, you know, the consequences of their actions might be a little to pay than they had originally figured, but if they were going to do all that, you'd think they'd want to do it as adequately as they could. Instead of, we've got people here with their homes parked in the parking lot of the motel, right?
Right.
These people have been for quite some time comfortable living in their RVs. Otherwise, I'm sure they would have did what they had to do to get them a different type of home. And those people that have their homes in the parking lot are getting a room rented at the motel. Meanwhile, we got people on the jetty, on the north jetty, living in cars with no windows, while their house is being locked in jail on the South Jetty, and they don't have a room rented.
How many people would you estimate are on the North Jetty?
I haven't been out there. I don't have transportation there.
Do you know of anybody in the hotel who has been out there?
Let's see here. Someone has been out to the North Jetty. Someone has been out on the North Jetty.
Were you at the demonstration yesterday?
No, I didn't go to the demonstration.
Did you talk to anybody who did?
Yeah, from what I understand, it went great.
How many people showed, you know?
Quite a few. Did you see the local news that they had going on here about it?
No, I'm down in Santa Cruz, south of San Francisco.
Oh, and you couldn't have got it. Oh, it was pretty good, actually. It got a lot of, it raised a lot of concern, and it drew a lot of,
A lot of attention?
Yeah.
Tell me what you read and saw about it. Describe what went out.
Well, what I saw was, excuse me, I've got a cold and
you're fine.
Taking medication, so,
No problem.
Right, it seemed to, the general opinion around the town, because they went and they did a bunch of interviews around town, was that, people on the South Jetty didn't deserve what they got.
Really, this is anti-homeless Eureka saying that the people on the South Jetty didn't deserve what they got?
Yeah, overall, that everyone knows that the South Jetty was a problem that had to be dealt with, but the way the county went about it, they don't have, I'd have to say they don't have the support of the people here in town, and,
Wow, but do you think you do?
Pardon?
You think the refugees do? I'm calling you guys the refugees.
This particular instance, yeah, I'd have to say that more people supported people on the jetty because they're finally, I think, becoming aware of that this is just a small percentage of the homeless problem that had to be dealt with. And now what essentially they did was they made homeless people out of people who weren't. They increased the homeless percentage in Eureka. And had the county actually been concerned with public health, okay, by being concerned over the virus, which is what foundation to act the manner that they did. You know, of course, we all know that they're using the health department as a scapegoat, so they don't have to take responsibility for their actions.
Right.
But if in fact public health had been what was, you know, concerning everybody, you'd think that they wouldn't have taken those people that had that virus and put them in their own community, in their own backyard. And first off, you think that they might have dealt with this situation during the time that this outbreak was happening, which was 3 months ago, rather than now. And they're not dealing with the truth. I mean, they're sugarcoating it and they're coloring it all kinds of different colors. It doesn't change it, but, you know, you have to be willing to look at it long enough to see it for what it is. And that was 8 reported cases throughout the county of Humboldt, and they're trying to blame it all on the jetty. Also, I mean...
Yeah, I understand it was 8 in Eureka and 8 on the jetty is what I heard from...
The rug.
Wendy Ring told me that.
Yeah, she's the one that headed up that shit-in yesterday, is what they called it. It was cute the way she worded it up.
Tell me about that.
Well, I guess what they did was they've got some construction going on down at the courthouse right now, so they've got the B&B portable toilets down there, and the demonstrators, all of them carried a roll of toilet paper, and... It was telling the county was that for the health hazard that existed on the jetty only existed because of Humboldt County's reluctance to provide what every person needs is a place to go. And had they had toilets, had the county taken on that responsibility that they should have in the beginning, we would have had a problem to deal with anyway. But now the homeless don't have a place to go at all, and where do they go? They have to go. It was cured in hell.
Where do they go if they have to go? And how many people do you think were involved? Any members on that?
From what I've seen on TV, I'd have to say there were probably, 30 protesters, maybe 50.
How long did it last?
I'd say 3 or 4 hours yesterday afternoon.
And
definitely drew a large crowd to the courthouse.
Excellent.
And they got people out of traffic pulled over that stopped to go to the bathroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really cool. And the pedestrians that were walking by and that were, you know, in town on their bikes and everything, they came and supported them and took their turn in the toilet. And they had lines back portable toilets all day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so great. Are you guys planning a further demonstration, or?
I would have to say that would depend on, you know, what happens next, and this thing is changing day by day, and, you know, some days we get more changes than others, so have to wait and see what happens. You know, I think Wendy, there's a few people that have the time to dedicate to, you know, putting in some planning and things like that, whereas the rest of us are just worried about getting our house and our belongings safe.
And that was Southern, who was jailed and still faces a court date and misdemeanor charge because she believed the county when they said they were going to, well, they signed a document on August 19th that agreed to allow the homeless to be at the South Spit Jetty until they were given permanent housing. That, of course, was short-circuited by the county's determination to evict them all so that they can turn the land over to the Coastal Conservancy for middle-class use in violation of a settlement that they signed with Jan Turner, attorney for the homeless through the Redwood Legal Assistance Foundation. I was outraged at this, and I was, as I worked on this story, I wrote an actual lengthy piece for Street Spirit last month, and I'm going to do a follow-up for this month, this coming November issue. And I was particularly concerned also that the Green Party, which controls the Arcata City Council, which is about half an hour north of Eureka, and, you know, it's not right next to the South Spit Jetty, but it's in the same county, and it's certainly an issue. Duff, who tried to set up a vigil, he said that no Green Party people responded to his call for help, and it just seemed to me that the Green Party had sold out up in Arcata. And he, Mike Wilson said, hey, the Green Party has set up wonderful shelters for the homeless in Arcata. And I said, that's fine, and we should certainly commend them for that. But what about their brothers and sisters down on the South Spit Jetty? Why weren't they helping them? And all they could do is say, well, you aren't up there. You don't know what's going on. We've got to trust our county officials. They know best. They've really been trying to help. Their integrity can't be questioned, and so forth, which sounds to me like a little bit too much like people who are getting into positions of power, and indeed the Greens now have a majority on the city council in Arcata, who are trying to schmooze their way forward and don't want to challenge existing county power structure. That's how it sounded to me. And I'm afraid that's what I said in heated tones to Mike Wilson when I talked to him this morning. Well, we've reached pretty much the end of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and Bad Woman Becca is going to be coming in soon, the bee person, the bee creature, give us some of her thoughts and music and stuff. Before we pass on to that, however, I promised you a clip from Anders Kaur. Anders is an activist who was actually arrested way back in 1988 for supporting homeless people. He set up a tent on the Pogonip area. Actually, no, it was on campus. Maybe it was somewhere between the two. He was arrested. He was tried for trespass. He was convicted. And then later on, 4 years later, he helped form the Union of the Homeless. And most recently, he's been involved with Homes Not Jails in San Francisco in their demonstrations to reclaim housing for the poor at Wary Housing at the Presidio. Here he is speaking at one of the most successful demonstrations we've ever had in Santa Cruz. It's actually a week afterward at a larger demonstration that was really kind of a victory celebration in May of 1994, when the Santa Cruz community stood up, or I should say sat down, and said, we will not accept these anti-homeless laws under Mayor Scott Kennedy that make it illegal for people to sit on the sidewalk in Santa Cruz. And here's a bit from there.
The figures for homeless people to shelter that are 2,500
May 18, 1994, in front of the bookshop Santa
there
Cruz.
There are 250 summer shelter beds. Okay, the causes of poverty in Santa Cruz. One of the major causes of poverty is that we don't have enough unions in Santa Cruz. Almost all of the shops downtown don't have unions.
Yeah.
Okay? That's one of the big problems. The Santa Cruz City Council, they claim they want to try to get rid of poverty. What they're actually doing is promoting poverty. They just awarded a $55 million contract for a new sewage treatment plant to an out-of-state, non-union company instead of a California-based unionized company because the out-of-state company, the contract that they were promoting was only 10% cheaper than the union local company. That means that for 10% cheaper, they're willing to hire non-union people and have our local union people go jobless. That's one of the major causes of poverty in this city. What we need... Yeah, we got a man over here who's been hanging out with the police there. He's filming, picking out individuals in the crowd, aiming the camera at them, and taking video footage. I'd just like you all to be aware of that. So if he does that, make a really ugly face, and so they can't tell what you look like when they haul you in. Thanks. I just want to update what Andrew said here about poverty in the United States. There's an article in the Sentinel today that said that the federal government now admits that there's 7 million poverty-stricken people, homeless people in the United States today. Thank you.
I'd just like to say that 1 in 5 people between the ages of 20 and 25 has a full-time job in New York City, and the average amount rent cost is about $1,000 to $1,500 a month. I'd like to know what happens to a mass amount of people when rent is so high and there are no full-time jobs, and a full-time job is only 40 hours a week, usually at about $6 an hour if you're lucky.
I just want to... I'm a little bit concerned about how we're really going to make an effect, make them close this, break this law. The man has said, just close this. Let me just say one second. You know, we got to organize, like, let's start off with this bookstore right here. How many people here would be willing to give 1 hour during the week to picket this bookstore? 1 hour. How many people, raise your hand if you would give 1 hour a week to picket the bookstore? We got to organize right here. Raise your hand if you would picket this bookstore for 1 hour a week. Let's organize right now. Let's organize this right now while we're all here together. We need somebody with a pencil and paper to take people's names down. We're doing
everything. Flying red. Horse from the gasoline war, took off from her station in the sun, turning her back on the pack at the pump. She jumped down from the spine to run. Full serve attendants were filling their hoses, self-serve was doing the same. The manager dialed the emergency number, insurance man won't take the claim. Sight of a horse crossing highways is frightening, but not with the breed that can fly. She's risen up to the level of oak trees, too low for the radar man's eye. I am not much of a joiner, she says, that's not where I draw my strength. Some of them go for the
depth of field, while most of them go for the land. I will go for the hard combination, 'cause I have some need to belong. I'm leaving this unkind of sign life behind me. I'll take what is mine and be gone. If you see something red flash across the horizon, it's not that your eyes aren't bright. She's taking her place with the red-tailed hawks and the broad-winged birds in flight. Flying red horse from the Ruby Road north, took off from her station to the south. I swear to you that this story is true. I heard it right from her mouth. You think they can tame you, name you and frame you, aim you where you don't belong. They know where you've been, but not where you're going. That is the source of the songs.
Society. That was John Gorka with Flying Red Horse. I don't know why I always open with that song, just because it's a nice little mellow song. Yeah, Fucking It Up in a Fuck Society, Music and Issues for Brainwashed Children. This is your host, Reckless, here on a Saturday afternoon. Hope everybody's nice and getting over their hungover from last night or whatever you're doing. Glad you're tuned in to 96.3. If you have any comments, you can give us a call at 427-4523 and leave a message 2 minutes in length, and we'll put it on the air. Again, that number is 427-4523. Got a little stuff lined up for you, some poetry and some interesting stuff. I'd like to talk about, I heard a little bit of what Norris was talking about on our show. Thanks, Robert. Bathrobe, Spears, Broadsides. And there's some homeless issues that have been pissing me off, or rather home issues and housing issues. I don't know if you've been over on the west side at all, but if you've seen some of the construction going on over there, they're building a whole bunch of new houses. And these new houses that they're building are expensive houses, and only the rich people are going to be able to live there, yet there's all these homeless people that need some kind of low-income housing to go on in Santa Cruz. And it just makes me mad because they're building it up by the college, and it's for people that have money, and that's all they want in Santa Cruz is people that have money. But the people that live here and all the people of all the fucking world that have a right to live on this land are being kicked out by cops. And we all know it happens. We all see it go down. Fucking, they want the undesirables off the street so the fucking tourists that come here and the people that come down to shop don't have to fucking look at the riffraff of society. And, you know, we have all these ordinances and stuff that are completely unconstitutional. And, you know, when our laws start becoming unconstitutional, then I think it's time that we have to, like, stand up and say something about it. So I just wanted to thank Robert Norris for getting some of that information out there. If you have any comments on the housing that's being put up, I'd like you to give a call, 427-4523, and tell me what you think. What do you think about all these ordinances that are unconstitutional? Like, you can't sit there, You can't fucking breathe there. You can't ask people for money. You can't speak out to your people on the radio waves. What do you think about that? Anyway, I'm going to read a little poem that I wrote. It's called Monster Girl, because I'm a monster girl. Put a little background music there for you. Yeah. All right. Monster Girl, that's what I am. To you, boy, to you. All the times you loved me and wouldn't heal my ears with the words. Too tomboy for you, but tomboy enough to understand your fears. Tomboy enough to share your dreams, your desires, your bed, but don't really share your heart. Feel me break, you thought I was strong. Feel me cry, I am not weak. I am a monster, monster girl, that's me. Hear me scream from the inside out. Don't admit it to your friends. I'm too tomboy to be soft, to be loving and pretty, to break down my walls for you and then be shoved back in. Alone, fighting for my name, fighting for my who. Who? It is me, Monster Girl. Strong, ashamed, and hidden beneath this dress. Toes pushed firmly in these pumps. I am not a monster that eats others. I eat myself. Yeah, that's just a little poem I wrote. Okay, as you know here on fucking it up in a fuck society, we usually start out a little mellow, talk about some political shit, try to get myself thinking. I have a nice long thing to read for you guys. This is again from Asada Shakur. I read a lot of stuff out of here because she went through basically the same thing that Mumia did, and maybe if we can look at our past, we can learn about some things and help understand like where we're all coming from and help understand the fucked up things the government has done and is still doing, and we're still letting them get away with the shit. Okay, this is something that she read at her court hearing, which took her 2.5 years to get. She was in jail for 2.5 years before she was even convicted of anything. Okay, here it goes. This is to the jury. Judge Thompson, brothers and sisters, men and women of the jury, I have decided to act as co-counsel and to make this opening statement, not because I have any illusions about my legal abilities, but rather because there are things that I must say to you. I have spent many days and nights behind bars thinking about this trial, this outrage, and in my own mind, only someone who has been so intimately a victim of this madness as I have can do justice to what I have to say. And if you think that I am nervous, your senses do not deceive you. It is only because I know that this movement can never be lived again, and that so much depends on it. I have to read this opening statement to you because I'm afraid that if I don't,